morning, good afternoon, good evening, good whatever it is wherever you are today. I'm Ali Amagasu, welcoming you to episode 51 of Cloud Unfiltered. Today, I am joined by Lisa Marie Nanfi. She is the community manager, I think you'd probably say, of the world's largest OpenStack user group. She's going to talk to us a bit about that. But first, I'd just like to say welcome, Lisa Marie.
Thank you so much for having me.
We appreciate you being on. Pete Johnson is with me again today, as usual. Pete, hello.
Hey, Ali. Thanks for having me back as well.
Sure. Lisa, there's a lot of interesting things we want to talk with you about. But before we get into those, let's start with what we always start with. How did you get into tech?
Oh, man. Well, I grew up here in the Silicon Valley.
So you really had no choice.
I went to Palo Alto High School, and all of my best friends just started writing code to develop different, you know, software applications, and then, just stuff we wanted to use, stuff we thought would help us, and then kind of thought, well, you know, this was really cool what I just built. Maybe other people would want to use this too. And so, you know, kind of open source, the birth of open source, this is in my DNA for sure. You know, we just put that stuff out there. Maybe other people can want to use it. And then after a while, companies were like, actually, we would want that technology. And all of my friends, you know, started getting bought up, and we just got absorbed into it. So, yeah, it was, I would say I grew up with it. My mother was a professor at Stanford. She was in the English department. I was an English major. So I came about tech literally by rolling up my sleeves and learning programming languages in the early days, you know, Pascal, and when I was at Oracle, PL SQL. So that's how I got into it. And I just absolutely loved it.
Wow. It doesn't sound like you had a chance. I mean, if you were raised where you were raised, we've had folks on the show who were like, I wanted to be an actor. And I tried really hard to be an actor, but everywhere around me, people kept offering me jobs in tech. And so I was just going to do this tech job until my acting career got off the ground. And then, you know.
Yeah, I wanted to write the next great American novel. And I ended up in tech, and I've written two books on OpenStack. So not quite the next great American novel, but maybe that'll come someday.
A little different audience for this.
Slightly different.
Right. So at the beginning, I mentioned that you run the world's largest OpenStack user group. But really, I don't know if I want to be sure they understand which group we're talking about. It's the SF Bay Area Open Infrastructure User Group, which it's the same thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. So for years, we were called SF Bay OpenStack. And let me qualify, too, because every time I say that, someone from the foundation will say, well, you know, there's really large user groups in China. And then they don't use meetup.com. So it's hard to count. But of the ones that we can count, you know, we have over 6,500 members. And lots. And it's global.
Oh, my God.
I know, right? It's we worked really hard to build this community. It's funny. I don't really think of myself as a community manager. I stole a term from Robin Bergeron. I call myself a community architect because it's much more than just managing a community. When you're growing a community like that and you're nurturing a community and you're shifting a community from, you know, in the early days when we would sit there at the meetups and literally write code, you know, with some of the PTLs and a bunch of the, you know, the hackers. And then, you know, now it's, then we moved into more admins and architects and then the operators. And I can talk about all that and why we did that. And then, as you might have noticed at the last OpenStack Summit, the conversation has changed from, you know, just OpenStack to more of an open infrastructure and all of these projects coming together. And we have been doing that for years anyway. If I look back at my calendar for the last 2 years, I think I've run 19 meetups on Kubernetes and Docker and Mesosphere. Hosted one of them for us too. And, you know, we talk about IoT, we talk about AI, we talk about all kinds of things, networking. So I just thought that the name of our organization wasn't really reflecting the content that we were delivering, right? And so Cloud Native Open Infra just seemed more of an all-encompassing term that reflected the content that we're delivering and the conversation and what people want to talk about. And so that also enabled us to bring in the folks from the CNCF. And once they put the meetup on their site, I started clicking through and I realized I also run the world's largest CNCF user group now by a lot. But it's absolutely OpenStack built it. You know, OpenStack is basically the foundation. It was the first ever OpenStack meetup group. So we really respect what grew this amazing community and how we all came together. So it's absolutely still, you know, OpenStack is at the core of it. And we still love OpenStack. So just to be clear.
So this is a little bit of a side route, but I used to run the LA OpenStack user group, and they'd meet at MetaCloud when we were there. And I mean, we had maybe 50 or 60 members at a meeting, and we didn't have anywhere near 6,500 on our total roster. I don't even understand where you would meet or how you would manage that. Like, do you have to break off into smaller groups? Or?
Well, okay, as I mentioned, it's global. So the 6,500 members, I think a lot of them don't live here. And so because we tend to do either a Google Hangout or a Zoom or some kind of live streaming of each meetup, I know Gary Kevorkian quite well, who used to run that user group with you. And you know, we used to talk about this all the time. He never wanted to live stream because he felt like no one would sit through LA traffic if they had an option of sitting at their computer, and meetups are supposed to bring people together. We never had that problem. We always had about 200 people in the room for each meetup. And then we would, you know, if I didn't do a live stream, I was getting pinged, you know, all for the whole hour saying, you know, where's the link? I want to participate. Because we had such great speakers. You know, the San Francisco Bay Area is an area where people would fly to want to come and speak to the user group. So people, you know, we had great content that we were delivering, and we wanted to be able to share it with the world. So it's not all of the 6,500 members are here. When I changed the name of the user group and I sent an email out to all of them, people from France were coming up to me at the last OpenStack Summit saying, you know, hey, you changed the name of your user group, and, you know, people from all over the world. So I think it is a very global community, which is great because that's what, you know, OpenStack and Kubernetes and all of these open source communities that we support are all very global. And I think just because we're located here and we have access to such great content, and it's where OpenStack started. When I used to be at HP and I'd run the meetup, I would literally point to NASA, which was like the runway was, you know, right outside of our window, and you could see the big NASA sign. Like, that's where OpenStack started. And it was really cool to be able to host meetups for years in that space. So this area is special that way. And I try to, you know, but you're right, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to keep all the community together, to keep all those people together. And yeah, it's effort for sure.
And do you have people banging down your doors to present there? Or?
Yes, absolutely. That's one thing we're lucky with. But I'm very protective of the community, and I want to make sure we're always delivering really, really good content, because people will look at the, you know, the meetup, you know, meetup.com/OpenStack, and they'll see that 6,500 number. And so they're thinking, oh, yeah, I want to get my company in front of this many people. And we record everything. We have a YouTube channel, so it has a shelf life even after the meetup. But if someone is thinking they're just gonna come and you know, pitch their you know, do a vendor pitch, then you're gonna lose your community. And one way we've built up the community is by keeping everything very open, very community focused, and we have a lot of people. You know, I think I ran the meetup 3 of those years I was at HP. I don't think we ever talked about, you know, anything HP the whole entire time. We ran a meetup at Portworx the other day, and we just basically talked about running stateful applications in containers, but it was focused on Kubernetes. That was the main focus. And Eric Hahn presented, and he was one of the original Kubernetes team members. And that's why the room was packed, because people
That's adding value. That's interesting, right?
Yeah, exactly. And we try to, you know, we did it with our friends from Codefresh. So there was 2 different, you know, companies there involved, and we were all showing community stuff. So and helping solve problems. So I think that's the main thing.
Wow, those sound terrific. Now, it sounds like you're delivering great content, you're having great speakers. Do you guys ever, you talked about in the beginning, doing OpenStack meetups, that you guys would work on a project, there'd be a PTL there, and you guys would try to, you know, hack on an issue. Does that happen anymore, or has it really kind of transitioned towards more presentations?
We haven't really written any code or fixed any bugs at these meetups for a while. But that's where we made a decision. You know, I started seeing what was happening in these communities. And when OpenStack, and this was maybe about 4 years ago, when it started growing and it started getting into enterprises, there was a gap. The operators and the admins were not really being, they were being a little bit left out. And that, we hear the feedback in the community sometimes before the, you know, the foundations hear the feedback. And so, you know, I think they responded by developing this COA, the Certified OpenStack Admin Certification. Kubernetes has a similar thing as well, because that was a group of people that were not really being focused on. And with the operators too, in fact, we just, this is something I'm super passionate about. And when I do my Kubernetes panel or any containers panel, we bring the conversation there, and you have amazing people like Tony Campbell, who was at CoreOS and is now at Red Hat. You know, they started this container operator framework. So I think it's, github.com/operator-framework. Tony's going to kill me if I get that wrong. But it's, you know, I think it's operator-framework on GitHub. But they're really focusing on the operators, which is kind of the missing piece of the puzzle. And I think a lot of people are going to the meetups to learn, not to sit there and write upstream code like it was in the early days,
right,
but to actually learn, because they are the operators, you know. And something like Kubernetes, you know, we'll do a hands-on lab with Kubernetes on OpenStack or OpenStack on Kubernetes. We've done actually both of those things, or just Kubernetes, you know, with something else. Rackspace just did one about how to scale Kubernetes, and it was a very I was just saying, people are coming to the meetups to learn how to use, how to operate, and not to learn how to code upstream anymore or how to contribute. It's easy to figure out how to contribute if you need to contribute. You know, everything's on GitHub, GitLab, Garrett. You know, there's ways to contribute, but you know, I think we're teaching people more.
Right. So it's not just sitting there watching PowerPoint. Sometimes you are actually, like it sounds, like hands-on labs.
We have, yeah. I try to do at least 2 or 3 of those a year. And for our big event, actually, which is happening on July 10th, we have a half day of hands-on labs, and we have presentations, and we have lightning talks. So this is something that, if I can just plug this event.
What's your big event, and where is it, and when is it?
Actually, Yes, July 10th, Intel is hosting it. So for those that have been involved in the community with us for a long time, this idea started around the OpenStack birthdays. So July is the month of the OpenStack birthday. So for the 4th birthday, we threw a big party at 111 Minna. We got a lot of the founders of OpenStack there. We did, you know, brief lightning talk. It was really fun. The next year after that, we did this big Lego game that taught you how to contribute upstream, and HP hosted that. It was really, really cool. The year after that, we just did a series of lightning talks, and that was super popular. But every year, I've challenged myself, and the community has challenged me, you know, like, what are you going to do this year? Because our birthday party has always been like much more than a birthday celebration. I always do have cupcakes, but that's my signature. But it's something, you know, I really want people to have an experience. You know, we create these moments that people remember. So last year, we really challenged ourselves. We did a half day of hands-on labs and some presentations, and the topics are broad. Our tracks were containers, IoT, and networking. And so we had a Kubernetes hands-on lab. We had Intel was doing the networking stuff, and then we had a keynote, and then in the evening we had the lightning talks. So it was like combining the best of all worlds, and it was super popular. So we're doing that again this year. So the first half of the day, from 1 to 6, is kind of the labs and a couple of the presentations, and then in the evening we'll have the dinner, we'll have the cupcakes, we'll have raffle prizes, we'll have really epic t-shirts. We really upped the t-shirt game this year, and we'll have the lightning talks as well. We've got 10 amazing sponsors. Actually, I think we're up to 11. Cisco is one of them, and actually Cisco is doing our main keynote.
Yay, Cisco!
Yay, thank you, Cisco. Cisco DevNet also. Sylvia, love that team out there. They're awesome. And I asked Lou, I kind of cornered him at the last summit, and I'm like, Lou, you've never spoke at my meetup. It's about time. So he was like, okay. So he's doing our keynote, and he's actually going to speak about Istio. See, this is how cool this is, right? He's going to talk about Istio and Service Mesh. We keep the conversation exactly where people want the conversation to be. So
Istio's a hot topic right now. I mean, that's
super hot topic.
We're having Google all over our stage at our events. We're all over their stage. There's a lot of chit chat about Istio and Apigee and all that fun stuff. So that's great that that's going to be there. One major question, as you're talking about all this, I mean, you get a lot. It sounds like a super fun event. Do you need to register? Is there a registration fee, or is it?
There's no fee.
Thank
you to our wonderful sponsors. Oh my gosh, they came through. I mean, it's like Red Hat and Canonical and Portworx is sponsoring, and Intel, of course, Datera, Platform 9, amazing sponsors, and who have been great community people. So because of our sponsors, you can get a free t-shirt, free cupcakes. So go to meetup.com/openstack. That's our user group. It's the next one, so it should pop up. We had a little bit of trouble with the registration page. But just the July 10th event, there is a link there. If you want to, Intel had we don't use Eventbrite anymore. We're using a Cvent or something like that. So we're trying to figure out people's t-shirt sizes and all of that. So there's a link that we'd like you to register on, but if that's too much trouble, just register on the meetup page. And but if you want to be eligible for the raffle, then we need you to click that link and register there.
Awesome. Well, now you know, everybody.
Yeah.
On the
and Google is
right up.
Google will be one of the, you mentioned Google with Istio and Service Mesh. Google will also be featured in two of our different tracks. So we've got great presenters from Google. I think that we're going to have them talk about Kubernetes, and Lou is going to talk about Istio and Service Mesh. But yeah, well, the content will be absolutely phenomenal. And it's funny, I was reminded from my friends at IBM that I actually ran the first ever Istio meetup. It was years ago. It was at DockerCon in Seattle. And when Istio was just, you know, a glint in the eye of the developers at IBM, when they had just released Project Amalgamate, we ran the first ever meetup and showed a demo, and it was really awesome. Dan Berg was on stage with me, and so much fun. So we are always bringing the cutting edge content, and these projects go off to be these amazing, amazing projects. So
sounds to me like you can't resist a good meetup.
I can't resist organizing a good meetup,
right.
I guess.
Pete, I've totally been hogging the conversation. My apologies as usual, but we still have plenty of time left. What do you want to ask Lisa Marie?
I'll get my shots. You're good about you know, spreading out the love here. So first of all, I can confirm that operator framework URL is correct. So github.com/operator-framework. I think Lisa is exactly what you're talking about. And you had me at Pascal, but it's completely written in Go. So there's that going on. I wanted to ask, I mean, so you hit a, there's a whole bunch of things that I want to deep dive on, and I'm not going to have time for all of them. The operator framework thing is an interesting one, because I have a distinct memory when I was working at HP Cloud, having a developer tell me that the code was the documentation at one point, right? Where it was like, open source projects typically go through this phase of, like, the only people can use them are the people that are writing them. And then they have to graduate to this, you know, this thing where with more broad applicability. So let me use that as kind of a framework towards, do you think the success of this specific user group to almost becoming like a, it's almost become its own conference in and of itself. If you know, you've got tracks and you've got all kinds of things that you're planning for this event on the 10th. Was that as much about sort of riding the wave of OpenStack as it matured? Or like what other tips would you have besides cupcakes or pizza to somebody who's trying to curate their own meetup in some way? What are some things that you think made bigger differences along the way?
Okay, you just asked me four questions, and that I'll take them from the top. Yeah, the days of writing the code, and you remember the old days where it said you need a PhD to be able to run OpenStack.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And then we tried to get away from that and make it a little bit easier, and then I think we made it even more confusing, and even the projects themselves. Look at how many projects there are around containers alone.
Right.
And now there's Kata, right? So there's, you know, this is not, I don't think we've done the best job at simplifying, and, you know, open source communities have never really been able to be accused of keeping it simple. So that's just kind of the nature of the beast, but that's why you have to think about the operators, the admins, you know, who's going to actually bring this to the enterprise so that these open source projects can have legs and can have a life beyond just a bunch of people writing code because we think it's
right.
Cool. So I think, you know, for us, shifting the focus there and the conversation there was kind of a necessary thing. And you know, I listen, right? So I follow where people want to take things and where the conversation wants to go and what would actually be useful. So this, you also mentioned a mini conference. You know, they used to do something in this area called OpenStack Days, actually the whole area, but they're not doing any OpenStack Days in the lower 48. I think Canada was doing one, and I believe I maybe just heard it got canceled. So this thing we're doing on July 10th is as close to an OpenStack Days, although it's well beyond OpenStack, but it's that type of thing, because the content, people still want the content. Not everybody can travel to the summits. And when you do get to the summit, there's so much content thrown at you. And, you know, it's all recorded, which is great, but do you really go and watch it all? So one of the things I've always tried to do is bring the content to the people. And so one thing that is very useful that I tell user group managers all the time, look at the content that was delivered at the OpenStack Summit. Ping any of those presenters, and I bet they would love to come and bring that to your user group. Instead of a 20-minute breakout session or whatever it is, 40 minutes where you're competing with, you know, 12 other tracks at the same time. You have a dedicated audience that's listening to just you. It can be recorded as well. You can have 2 hours if you want. You have, you know, time to network and to engage before and after. We like to have a combination of, you know, 30 minutes of networking and beer and pizza, and then content, and then 30 minutes after, because the presenters are always inundated. Even if we do Q&A, you know, there's always half the room that doesn't ask questions, and then they go up to you afterwards, and then you're like, you know, pinned to the wall answering questions for another 45 minutes. So, I mean, that just tells me people are starved for this conversation. And over the years, I used to say, hey, show of hands, who's coming to the OpenStack Summit? And most of the community was raising their hands. Over the years, that's become less and less. And for the last 3 summits, the only people that raised their hands were people like me who were actually going to present at the right. at these summits. So people.
Oh, we're having a little hiccup. Hopefully you come back. Ring.
The con- there we go. Uh-oh, did I lose you?
We just lost you. People, you like 10 seconds, 5 seconds.
Okay. All right. Well, that's just even more validation of why we need to bring the content into, you know, into people's houses, people's, you know, communities where they live.
So it sounds like it's content. I mean, you said earlier that you try not to let people come in and pitch individual products and have it be kind of a salesy thing. And if you're grabbing people off of, you know, OpenStack Summit talk tracks, that it's going to be more technical and more problem solution based than, hey, you should come be a beta customer kind of.
Well, yeah, exactly. And if right. you... and hopefully it's not cutting out anymore. It's coming in and out for me a little bit too. But yeah, if you get your talk accepted at a KubeCon or Cloud Native Con or an OpenStack Summit, it's probably going to be a community-oriented talk. And that's the type of talks that we like to deliver also. Now, that doesn't mean you can't show a demo to explain what it is that you built and that you're showing, and your logo could be in the corner of your demo. I mean, we're not, you know, we do have these things sponsored. Somebody is paying for the beer and pizza. And so people will say, you know, can I give a 5-minute pitch, you know, about the company? And so, of course, that's you. You can do that, but it's really, you just don't want to lose your audience. And so that's kind of the main thing. So one thing I love to do is have 2 different people from different companies talk, because that kind of at the same time, because that kind of ensures that everybody, you know, focuses on the problem that we're solving. I mean, this whole thing is all about solving business problems and use cases. And that's what people are trying to do. And usually that means combining a couple of different community open source projects, or even some maybe not open source projects together, in order to solve those business problems. And that's where the conversation has gone. And you saw that at the last OpenStack Summit. You see that with the different projects that OpenStack is, like Kata Containers is a really good one. It's about the integration with these different technologies. And that is the problem that we're solving, whether it's at the summits or whether it's in the community at these user group meetings.
You just mentioned, let me interrupt one sec, Pete. You had mentioned, you've mentioned Kata a couple times now, Lisa, but I don't think you mentioned the meetup. There's a separate Kata meetup, isn't there?
Oh, okay. So yes, I would like to, as you can probably tell, I'm passionate about hosting the first ever meetup of any awesome technology. So I've been bugging them to host a Kata meetup since they announced it in December. But we are finally going to do it. It's actually part of the July 10th. It's going to be a hands-on lab. Kata Containers. And so it's at the Intel event. We can do a separate one some other time too, but this one is actually going to be a hands-on lab, because 1.0 was just released in Vancouver. Super excited about that. And I've been kind of teasing this project to the user community for 6 months since they announced it in December. So, and Intel is a major contributor to the project. They were the ones who donated the clear containers part of it, and then Hyper did the other part. So it's kind of perfect that we're hosting this at Intel, and that they will help us do that hands-on lab. And I hope Annabelle B and on IRC and Rutuccio and Kendall and the folks can make it down. I don't know if they'll be able to, but I would love for that awesome team to be there when we actually kick this off.
Yeah, that sounds like an exciting project. So yeah, I want to be sure we got the Kata meetup in there. Back to you, Pete.
Well, let me follow up on, I mean, it sounds like more and more of the conversations in your meetup are centering around Kubernetes and container issues. And are you seeing the same pattern that we just talked about with OpenStack, that there's more operator and admin interest in that topic than there was developer interest? And like, how much has that lagged, do you think, from one to the other?
Yeah, I think they're separate. I think there's definitely people who are developing upstream to Kubernetes, absolutely. And and which is awesome. And Kubernetes needs that. But I think there's also people who really need to know how to use Kubernetes, how to integrate as people are shifting, you know, away from VMs and container orchestration is a big thing. I mean, I work at a company that is completely 100% based on people going to container, you know, containers. And so a lot of people are making a bet on that. But if you don't have the operators, I mean, that URL that you mentioned for the container operator framework, that's going to be super important. Because if we leave those people out, then we're not going to have anyone that actually knows how to use this and build this, and it will not get the enterprise adoption that it needs to get. And it doesn't matter how much great code you write as a developer and you contribute upstream, no one will see it. So that is a very important piece of the puzzle.
Are you seeing, I guess, based on the mix of folks that you have in your audience, or are you seeing that it's more and more the admins that are showing up and asking those questions as opposed to the developers?
Yeah, it's still a little bit of a mix, but I would say less developers and less upstream contributors, right, and more admins and operators.
Because it seems, at least the things that we see, I think, in the field here at Cisco are that that learning curve for the IT admin is a little steeper for containers than maybe it was for VMs. Even though that maybe that's not fair because the VM one happened so long ago, who even remembers that anymore, right?
Yeah, not me. I'm not that old.
But like if you're... Well,
I remember writing a lot of marketing materials about it, but okay. We're going to go with that. We're going to see.
I would say there is a steep learning curve, like something like Kubernetes. But it's worth it once you do that learning curve.
Admins can't do it.
There's tools out to help. Those docs that you mentioned, we didn't really get back to that. Those are super important. So if you have an open source project and you're not devoting a lot of time to having a portion of your community writing the docs, your project is not going to succeed. So the docs are super, super important. I think the folks at Linux figured that out. The folks at OpenStack are really working, you know, hard on that. And it might not be the sexiest part of contributing to a community, but it's so important. And so I'm always going on about that. So docs. But yes, I think that is the shift, and I think people need that information, and they're going to go there. I mean, it's just a matter of time. It's people are going to get there if they're trying to build all this stuff on their own. That they're fine. They're going to eventually just take 6 months to come back around to being like, well, I really should have just learned this. But having said that, I always say, hey, show of hands, you know, who's in the audience? And when I ask how many people are developers, we do get a fair amount of people raising their hand. But I'm don't then ask the second question. It's like, well, are you an upstream developer? Are you a core contributor? Are you a developer who could also be an operator, right? Or an architect or an admin. So I think that developer term is also kind of getting used broadly.
It is, yeah. But so it sounds like you're seeing a good mix, and that matches some of the things that we're seeing. That, I mean, as I think we're all seeing the same thing here, that in order to see the tech take off, you don't just need the core developers. You need a richer set of people that are going to play different roles in an enterprise adoption of that technology.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Hey, Lisa Marie, something I wanted to ask you about. You've mentioned Portworx a couple times. So for folks that are watching right now, that is where you work. Do you want to take a minute to tell us what this company does?
Yeah, sure. Super exciting startup in the Silicon Valley. I mentioned containers, and that's the way that people are kind of moving and developing. And if you, the one piece that we provide is the storage piece. So Portworx is a cloud native storage company, because when people first started running things in containers, they were thinking stateless applications. And there was a lot of thought in the industry that containers, especially Kubernetes, are only for stateless applications. But what happens to all the data? I mean, it turns out that stateful is super important. So you're going to want to run those databases in containers at some point. You're going to need a solution that helps you do that. And all of that stuff that you expected from VMs, like the high availability and that security and, you know, all of that, everything that persistent data needs, you need that in containers. So when you lose your containers and they go down, you don't lose your data. So that is the piece that Portworx solves. And we work really closely with, you know, as I mentioned, Eric Hahn came from Google. He was the original Kubernetes PM, huge container knowledge in there, and a lot of storage knowledge. The founders came from Ocarina that got sold to Dell. And so we have a lot of background in containers and storage. And we already have a lot of customers already running in production, because this is a problem that we solve for Mesosphere. So they resell us. We solve it, you know, for Docker. So we have a lot of customers who are running, you know, things like Kafka and Cassandra and Postgres databases in containers, and or even WordPress applications, and they wouldn't really be able to do it any other way. So it's a lot of fun. It's a fun little niche to be part of, and I work with the nicest, smartest people on the planet. So I actually love my job. It's really great. And so the user group is sort of, you know, a nights and weekends thing, but we're all part of the same cloud native ecosystem. And even at Portworx, we have a couple of open source projects that we've donated and have gone anywhere and hung my hat on a company that didn't really have a strong open source DNA as well. So I get to mix all my worlds together.
Well, thanks for sharing. Just in case our listeners haven't all heard of Portworx yet. I don't know how long you guys have been around. When was the company founded?
About 4 years ago. Most of our customers have gone production in the last 2 years, particularly the last year. So we're growing really super fast. But people might not have heard of us, because we're sort of, you know, we'll just be part of the solution and solving a problem. But yeah, portworx.com. Come check us out. We have a lot of docs on our website and self-running tutorials. So Katacoda demos, you can download it for free and try it out. So lots of good information out there.
That's good. That's really great that there's some tutorials there. I feel like one of the things I just walked away from the last Cisco Live understanding a lot better is that we're still a lot further ahead of most of the customers than we think on containers. A lot of them were coming by and expressing a great deal of anxiety at the booth I was working about containers. And that's important, I think, for us to understand is, you know, if we want people to adopt these solutions, they need to understand exactly how you embrace it. You know, how is it going to work with your legacy applications and architectures? You know, what do you need to do to enable this in a hybrid cloud environment? Like, how does all that work? And I think it's just a lot for people to swallow. So if you're providing little tutorials to help them along the way, even if they aren't ready to adopt a solution yet, I think just going to the different companies that are providing the solutions and starting to see what they have to say about them would be really helpful.
You nailed it. We have tutorials that aren't even on Portworx. So we have tutorials on installing Kubernetes, because if you can't get the container part working, then you're not even going to get to us. So we have a lot of really good information on Mesos out there as well on portworx.com. So we try to be really good community people. And you're absolutely right about the hype cycle, and now it's catching up. But, you know, some of our customers are, you know, they feel like I bring Neo on stage with me whenever I can, and Michael Richman will be on stage again on the July 10th event talking about what they've built with Kubernetes, and they're running Kafka and Cassandra. And because if Neo is the autonomous car company, the guys from Tesla started it. So if you think about those self-driving cars, they generate 15 terabytes of data a day. 15
wow.
terabytes of data a day. Because think about all the things the cars have to keep track of so they don't, you know, crash into each other. So once you take the driver out of the equation. So it's a lot of data. So they're a great use case for, you know, running all of that in containers. And they've, you know, they always feel like, I always tell them, you got to tell your story, because you're further along than most people. And you have a story to tell, and they're scaling, you know, up to 6,000 cores, and they're, you know, they're having the growing pains that everybody else is going to have when they're running these large databases.
Do they store that data? Like, do you need it once the car is seen? Oh, there's a cyclist, there's a dog, there's another car. Do they need that data afterwards?
They need the data. And besides, you want to run analytics on that data. But yeah, they have massive databases, and they use us for cloud native storage. So the data problem is a problem that doesn't go away, and people have been scared to do it because they're like, okay, you know, day one is pretty easy, but once you get into day two and day three, that's when people have been so afraid they haven't tried it yet. So but, you know, now they're realizing they have to, you know, data doesn't go away. So
nope,
solve that problem.
And I think that if you think about the typical person that would go to Cisco Live, that's way more this second wave operator kind of admin kind of person that
you're right.
is receiving this information after. I mean, the developers, you know, the kind of person that would work for Neo is going to be like, yeah, let's go for it. And don't necessarily think about the day two and day three stuff where you have some of these storage issues and some of these, okay, now I have to live with this and not just make it easier to write code. There's all these other things that come along with it. And I think what we're starting to see is how, if we can learn anything from how OpenStack handled that, if Kubernetes can learn anything from that, it's that how important it is to engage with that audience with good documentation so that they can take that learning curve on.
Absolutely. And engaging with other members of the community too. I mean, so one of the labs that we're going to try to do on the 10th, we got the folks from Redis Labs in and you know, they pitched this idea of kind of like a, sort of like a LAMP stack, but for Kubernetes. So if you think about sort of where Helm charts leave off, we need a service because you've got Istio and you've got service mesh, but no one's built that service catalog yet, right? And no one's kind of built the whole stack. And so I was talking to the folks at Neo, the developers there a couple of weeks ago, and I said, you know, if we built this, would that be useful to you? And they were like, oh my gosh, when is it going to be ready? Like, can we have it now? Like, call me the minute it's done. So, you know, you need that catalog. You need to make these things easier for the developers, but it means different technologies coming together. It's not just going to happen in Kubernetes. We don't, you know, storage isn't just going to happen with, you know, Ceph or open source, you know, communities. It's all of these things have to work together and have to work together really, really well. So we're playing nice. We're getting together with the Kube team and with Redis and with other folks to try to build some things like that and see if it's useful to people.
Very cool. Hey, we're starting to run out of time. Pete, I don't know how many questions you have left, but you can pick your favorite. Oh, you're good. All right. Terrific. Well, I've got what I need. I learned a lot today about the current state of the Bay Area Open Infrastructure User Group. I appreciate it. And I really had no idea that this event was coming up on the 10th. So thank you for sharing about that.
I hope to see you listening.
Sign up now. It's free. And if you register, you're going to get a t-shirt that fits you instead of some weird giant t-shirt that you can only wear to bed.
Exactly. And we have women's sizes. So women, I will expect to see you at this meetup.
That's right. Girl power.
I like big giant t-shirts, right?
Yeah, they're so flattering. Yeah, arms that come down to here and just.
Well, I don't know if you've met Pete in person, but he's like 6'10" or something. And
I'm a big guy. I need a big t-shirt. So
well, then you need to register for your size to make sure, especially if you have extreme sizes. We need to know that.
He's the target audience for that t-shirt that I'm always bringing home and going, where are all the women's media?
Yeah, exactly. Let's couture this now. Oh my gosh, no. We're solving that problem. We love women in tech, and we have to respect that we're not all the same size. So we want everybody to look beautiful in their t-shirt.
Before I let you go, I do want to ask, are you going to be appearing on stage anywhere? You're always organizing events, but is there any place that our audience might run into you at an event up on a panel or speaking on your own in the near future?
I actually will be doing my Kubernetes panel again on July 10th. So I will be on stage, and I've got awesome people on stage with me, like Tony Campbell, because he wants to showcase the container operator framework. And so
Tony Campbell's been on the show. He was a great guest.
That's my ride or die. Love Tony. he's so awesome. So yes, I will be, I'll have our customer Neo talking about what they've built with Kubernetes. So, and I'm emceeing that whole event. So I'll be on stage. People are going to get kind of sick of me on July 10th. So that's the next thing. And then hopefully, the next OpenStack Summit, the next KubeCon, you know, I haven't done the CFP yet for either of those, but I will be doing that. So yeah, probably those two things as well.
All right, cool. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show. If you can send me the links afterward to where folks can register for these events and go to find more information, I'll include it in the show notes and in the promotional efforts that we spend on social media afterwards so folks can find it.
I absolutely will. But meetup.com/OpenStack is a great place to start. Sign up for our community. Sign up for the newsletter I send out. I send one out about every 2 weeks with tons of good information. I promise I won't spam you. It'll all be useful. So sign up.
Great. Thank you so much again, Lisa. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Pete. We'll talk again soon, I hope.
Okay. Well, thank you, guys. It was fun.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.